देवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्यां नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासां ततो जायामुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवते उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति न इष्टकी।
सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम अ न्यू चैप्टर टुडे, टेंथ कैंटो, चैप्टर 21, चैप्टर एंटाइटल्ड The Gopis Glorify Krishna's Flute. Text number 1 and 2. So we'll read together text number 1.
Sri Sukha Uvacha Ittam Sarat Swachha Jalam पद्माकार सुगंधिना न्याविसद्वयुना वातम् सगो गोपालकोच्युता। श्रीसुक उवाच इत्तम सरत्स्वच्छ जलम् पद्माकारा सुगंधिना न्याविसद्वायुना वातम् सगो गोपालकोच्युता। श्री सुक उवाच इत्तम सरत्स्वजलम् पद्माकारा सुगंधिना न्याविसद्वायुना वातम् सगो गोपालकोच्युता। इत्तम सरत् स्वच्छ जलम् श्रीसुक उवाच इत्तम सरत् स्वच्छ जलम् पद्माकारा सुगंधिना न विसद्वायुना वातम् श्रीसुक उवाच इत्तम सरत् स्वच्छ जलम् पद्माकारा सुगंधिना न विसद्वायुना वातम् सगो गोपालकोच्युता।
मतजिस्
श्रीसुक उवाच इत्तम सरत् स्वच्छ जलम् पद्माकार सुगंधिना न विसद्वायुना वातम् सगो गोपालकोच्युता।
Sri Sukha Uvacha. Sri Sukadeva Goswami said, Ittam, in this way, Sarat, of the fall season, Swacha, clear, Jalam, having water, Padma Akara, from the lake filled with lotus flowers, Sagandina, with the sweet fragrance, Nyavisat, he entered, Vayuna, by the breeze, Vatam, ventilated, Sa, with, Go, the cows, Gopalaka, and the cowherd boys, Achyuta, the infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead. Translation. Sukadeva Goswami said, thus the Vrindavan forest was filled with transparent autumnal waters and cooled by breezes perfumed with the fragrance of lotus flowers growing in the clear lakes. The infallible Lord, accompanied by his cows and cowherd boyfriends, entered that Vrindavan forest. There's no purport, so we'll read text number 2. Kusumita vanaraji sushmi bringa dvija kula gushta sarasarin mahindram madupati ravagya charayanaga saha pashupala balas chachaku javenum. The lakes, rivers and hills of Vrindavan resounded with the sound of maddened bees and flocks of birds moving about the flowering trees. In company of the cowherd boys and Balaram, Madhupati, Sri Krishna, entered that forest, and while herding the cows, he began to vibrate his flute. Purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. As suggested by the words, Chakuja Venum, Lord Krishna skillfully blended the sound of his flute with the lovely sounds of Vrindavan's multicolored birds. Thus, an irresistible heavenly vibration was created. Om Ajnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chaksharon Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Kadamayam Tadanti Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajata Ragunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sagana Lalitam Sri Vishakan Vitamsya He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhano Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyaye Vacha Patita Nam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo, Hare Ramo, Ramo Ramo, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. After the most wonderful class that we all heard yesterday from His Grace Vrindavan Chandra Prabhu, I really feel like a sparrow sitting over here. And as I was sitting over there and hearing the class, and Gokulanand Prabhu was just mentioning towards the end of the class that the beauty of the class was that Vrindavan Chandra Prabhu spoke straight from the heart. Everything was very deeply realized. So many years of practicing Krishna consciousness. Practically he was born in the movement, so to say. I mean, he came into the movement at a very young age. And one can see that just by following the process of Krishna consciousness seriously for over the last 20-25 years, the extent of maturity that has come into him is really inspiring. And for a boy who is so young, you know, he was talking with such deep conviction that finally at the end of the day, what matters is the quality of our devotional service. In fact, for me particularly is in one sense a Siksha Guru, because he was the one who actually connected me to deity worship. And this was about 15-16 years back, when he was already a pujari. Maybe at that time his age was just 16 or 17 years. And it so happened that one day, you know, there was a shortage of pujaris, and somehow he was doing the aarti, and then he happened to look outside and he saw me, and just at that time I had received my Brahman thread, and he was inspired to come and ask me whether I would be, you know, keen on doing deity worship. And of course at that time I had no concept of what deity worship was. What to talk about concept of deity worship, I had no inclination, because to my mind deity worship was something that was so purifying and so pure that I never really thought myself to be anywhere going inside the altar. But just having received the Brahman thread, and here is a pujari who is asking me whether I would like to do deity worship, and also spontaneously I said yes. And from that day onwards, you know, somehow by Gopinath's mercy, they have kept me in the altar. And what I could see over the years, every Thursday, you know, practically, except in the time he would be traveling with his father out preaching, he would be there to worship Janardhan. And to worship Janardhan, you need a certain level of purity. So, this is the power of devotional service. And if we take this process of devotional service seriously, then actually, you know, we can see the transformation that it brings about into our consciousness. And Vrindavan Chandra Prabhu is a fitting example of the next generation of devotees, you know. So we have such a wonderful example of somebody who would be able to carry on this movement in the years to come. So we feel very gratified and we feel very happy when we are able to hear devotees of his caliber and of his young age speaking with so much of realization. It gives us a tremendous amount of security in knowing that our movement is in safe hands. And, you know, because as far as I am concerned, I know that I have a few more years to live, if at all. So it's only a matter of time before this old generation makes way for the new generation to take up. And unless and until we have devotees who are completely committed to the cause, who can inspire others, you know, because our movement is one of inspiration. You know, people have to be seen as setting the highest standards in their own personal lives, because no amount of preaching sitting on the Vyasasan is going to inspire anybody unless and until they see that this person is actually leading a life of a high quality of devotion. So that's the inspiration that I got yesterday after listening to Vrindavan Chandra Prabhu's class. So it's my humble request to him, if at all he's going to listen to this class, that he should give more and more of these classes and inspire the next generation of devotees to take up to this process seriously. So today, we are starting this new chapter. And in fact, all these days we have been listening to the glories of Vrindavan Dham. And today, we are seeing once again, Sukadev Goswami is narrating further description of how beautiful Vrindavan Dham was in autumn. Of course, in one sense, Vrindavan is beautiful throughout the year. It is just that we don't have the vision to see it. Right? When we go to Vrindavan, what we see is the aspect of Vrindavan which is covered. Right? Only the material eyes can see that particular aspect of Vrindavan, which is what particularly I can see, you know, the external features of Vrindavan. But to a transcendentalist, Vrindavan Dham is what Sukadev Goswami is narrating here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? And actually, in one sense, you know, we can see that this description of Vrindavan Dham, which is there throughout the pages of the 10th canto, in some degree or the other, makes Vrindavan Dham so attractive, right? Just by sitting over here and reading Srimad Bhagavatam and discussing Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, we are so much inspired and enlivened to be discussing this description of Vrindavan Dham. And for devotees, this is what actually is all that they are looking out for. Whereas for a materialistic person, what he needs is to visit different places at different times of the year. Right? And that's how he gets satisfied. He feels that, you know, I'm having some variety in my life. Like, you know, in the last 1 year, we have been seeing so many of these foreigners who have been coming to our temple, you know, who have been brought by these various cruises that come. And I happened to be speaking to one of them to find out from where he had come and, you know, how is it that he got connected to this particular cruise. And he was saying that he was actually from Spain. And he was on this particular cruise which was traveling around the world. And this cruise, you know, boats don't go as fast as aeroplanes. So this particular cruise was on the ocean for 100 days. That's little over 3 months. And I was asking him, you know, what is it that actually inspired you to go on this world tour on a boat? I mean, one would normally go on a world tour in an aeroplane, you know, good, because the whole idea would be to see new places and experience new people. And what he said actually just started my thought process working, that he was actually looking out for association. He said, my life is so boring. You know, I'm a single person. I got married and I'm divorced now. And my children are not with me anymore. They don't even connect with me anymore. And throughout the year, I'm actually, you know, staying alone in my apartment. I go to work and then I come back in the evening and it's so lonely. It's so boring. In fact, that loneliness is so overwhelming that once in a year, I go on this world cruise, you know, for 100 days, just so that they can be with, he could be with people around him. Right? So this power of association, you know, what we all discuss in our classes every day, and we get so much inspired by the power of association. I mean, this is what everybody craves for. I mean, we crave for the association of devotees, but a materialistic person is craving for the association of just people. Like I remember years back when we were in Germany for a year or so, there was this particular supermarket that we would visit once in a week or maybe twice a week in order to purchase our groceries. And I would be really surprised to see there would be a section of people who would be there in the supermarket practically from morning to evening. If you go to the supermarket in the morning, you'll see them over there. If you go in the evening, you'll see them over there. If you go in the afternoon, you'll see them over there. Right? Whole day they are sending, they are spending in the supermarket. Why? And I, you know, asked somebody and he told me that these people are so bored, you know, that, and they are feeling so lonely, that whole day they send in the, they spend their day in the supermarket just so that they can feel, you know, that there is somebody around them. Right? And in the Western world, this factor of loneliness is actually quite overwhelming and makes people become actually suicidal, makes them so depressed. Particularly because the weather is so bad over there. You know, somehow Krishna has arranged it in such a way that although they might be materially opulent, the whole environment is such that it makes a person completely, you know, mental. And that loneliness is actually something that people are, you know, feeling it so strongly. So for devotees, you know, when we discuss about Vrindavan Dham, we don't actually need to go to Vrindavan Dham. You know, we can be sitting over here and discussing Vrindavan Dham and feeling as if we are actually there, because the description of Sukadev Maharaj about Vrindavan Dham is so lucid and so clear. It's like, you know, armchair traveling. You know, we just sit in an armchair and then you are looking at all the brochures of all the countries and all the universes, and, you know, and you are seeing that all the places, you know, if you see, for example, this, the heavenly planets, they are there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? Golok Vrindavan is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Every place conceivable is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then, you know, the description of Mount Sumeru, right? Gandhamandana mountain, you know, these mountains are made of pure gold, and you're seeing all those descriptions and you're able to imagine, you know, what was it that actually, you know, is there, what is there in this material creation. And it is so fantastic that you don't actually have to visit any of these places in order to see it. And if you see this description, the third canto of Kardama Muni's aerial mansion, right? How could anyone possibly conceive of, just in the mind, you know, of chanting a few mantras, he created this beautiful aerial mansion which was practically a living city. You know, it didn't have just him and his wife, but it had thousands of maid servants, it had waterfalls, it had fountains, it had gardens and lakes and palaces. Right? And not just ordinary palaces, each of those palaces were made of gold, silver, precious stones, diamonds. Right? Very elaborate description of this mansion is there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And also if you see the pastime of the churning of the milk ocean, we see how it is that Krishna, you know, in the form of Vishnu, he had to come in order to actually help the demigods. Because the demigods, when they started to lift this Sumeru mountain, you know, which is 10,000 yojanas high, made of pure gold, when they were trying to lift it, they were in such a, you know, traumatic situation. I mean, they were not able to even lift it properly. They lifted it somehow or the other, all the demigods put together, somehow or the other lifted it and carried it for a short distance. But then the weight of that was so large that they just dropped it, and thousands of demigods actually got crushed under the Sumeru mountain. Right? And then they had to pray to Vishnu, and Vishnu came along with Garuda. And what did Vishnu do? Vishnu took up this mountain as if it was a small plaything and put it on the back of Garuda. And not just he put the mountain on top of Garuda, but all the demigods also climbed on top of Garuda. Right? And then Garuda moved along with this. So, you know, when you read about all these pastimes, you just understand how inconceivable the Lord is. So then what is the need for us to even aspire for anything else in this material world? You know, the Srimad Bhagavatam provides us with whatever we need. Right? And the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, you know, it is so sublime and it is so practical for us to see. Like Vrindavan Chandra Prabhu was describing yesterday, that, you know, we have to be convinced that this material body is temporary. Unless and until we are convinced that this material body is temporary, we are not going to make any spiritual advancement. And that's what Rishabhdev says in the fifth canto, right, in his instructions to his 100 sons, Nayam deho deha bhajam na loke kashtan kamam arhatam dikvujambe tapo divyam putrake yena satvam. So this human body is meant for doing some things which are unique, not what is being done by the hogs and dogs, right? Birth, old age, disease and death is something that is staring at us in our face and is also staring the animals. But what is the difference? The difference is that we are able to perceive it. And we are able to understand that this is going to come to us sooner or later. And Srila Prabhupada, in one of his classes in Vrindavan, in fact he gave a series of classes on this fifth chapter of the fifth canto in Vrindavan Dham, beginning with the first verse. For a whole month of Kartik in 1976, Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan Dham, just a year before he actually finished his pastimes here in this world. And he was speaking so powerfully on this instructions of Lord Rishabhdev to his 100 sons. And in one class he was describing in this, on the fifth canto, that tapo divyam means what? What does the word tapasya mean? Tapasya for devotees means that we follow the rules and regulations of Krishna consciousness strictly. But then this tapasya is not like the ordinary tapasya that we see out in the material world. The tapasya that is performed out in the material world is actually mundane tapasya. Right? Getting up early in the morning and having to catch a train. Like yesterday we were seeing this small movie that Shubhavilas Prabhu had made, and it's called, the name of the movie is Dombivli Fast. I don't know how many of you all have seen it. Very instructive. And once in a while we really have to see this in order to refresh our memory, that actually we are in this Dombivli fast train, just like this person who works in a bank, stays in Dombivli and, you know, he has his office in Churchgate or BT station, wherever. And every day in the morning, it's alarm bell, alarm clock rings at 5:30 sharp. It has to go off at 5:30. Right? And then he, you know, nudges his wife, and then his wife gets up, goes into the kitchen, and he goes into the washroom and has his shower. And then his wife starts preparing his lunch. He barely has any time. He has to leave at about 7 o'clock because he has to catch a particular train. And then he just tells his wife, okay, I'll see you in the evening. And then he takes his dabba, his wife gives him his dabba, and then the wife gets on with the other activities in the house, which is waking up the children and so on. And then this person comes into the station and then catches this train. The train is crowded, overflowing with people. Some of the other managers get into the train and then he goes to his office and then, you know, he's counting notes. He's a teller in the bank, so he counts his notes and gives it to whoever comes. And then he returns back in the evening and the same cycle is repeated. You know, he comes to the station and he has to wait for a particular train, gets into that train, reaches home, spends a few minutes with his son, and then goes to sleep. And next day morning again at 5:30, the alarm bell goes off. And towards the end, the whole thing is speeded up to such an extent that you see that his whole life is passing by just in front of him. And he has got no time to even think that his whole life is getting exhausted. Recently, an uncle of mine who's 82 years came from Nagpur. I mean, he's spent over 40 years in Nagpur now. And he was assistant commissioner of income tax. And after he finished his retirement, I mean, after he became retired, then he started his own private practice or consulting. And then he was active till about 4-5 years back, earning money. And now he's 82 years and now he just visits all his relatives. So I was asking him that, you know, what is it that actually, you know, engages you the whole day? So he was describing his typical day. He gets up in the morning at 7 o'clock and then he has coffee And then after that he sits with the newspaper and he says, it takes me at least 1 hour to read the newspaper. And then after he reads the newspaper, then he goes for a short walk or he goes to the market to make some few purchases. Just him and his wife are staying in a huge house. And then after that he comes home, then he has his lunch and then he takes a short nap and again goes out in the evening. And then he was telling me that the only thing that is remaining in my life or in our life, him and his wife, are memories. That's the only thing that's remaining. You know, we keep looking back 40 years when our children were very small and what our children were and how affectionate they were and how loving they are. And you know, all those things are what is actually keeping us engaged. And I was thinking to myself, my God, if I'm going to become old like him and if I'm going to be thinking like that, what a waste of life. Then we understand Lord Rishabhdev's instructions to his 100 children that this human form of life is not meant to be living like dogs and hogs. Because the same thing the dogs and the hogs must also be doing. In practically the same way, maybe slight difference here or there. And towards the end of life, when there is nothing to look forward to, then all that you have are memories. And he was having deep realizations in one sense, because he had 3 children and all his 3 children are now not staying anywhere near him. And he's got one son who is serving in a multinational company in a very high post. And his son doesn't even bother to call him. You know, they are so much attached to their children that all the time he was only saying that, you know, I wish at least once a week our son were to call me up. It will be so nice. So this attachment is so strong that even at such an old age, if we are not getting ourselves attached to Krishna, all that we will be left with are memories, which we keep on going back into, keep on rewinding, like this, you know, this cassettes, just so that we can go back in time to when we were very young and we were able to do something physically. So this process of Krishna consciousness is so much guaranteed to ensure that towards the end of life we are actually focusing not on our families, not on our position in society, but trying to focus on Krishna. The spiritual master gives us necessary instructions to ensure that we are somehow or the other on the right track. And the spiritual master doesn't interfere. The message is very clear. If you look at the scriptures are telling us what is it that we need to do. Like we see from the pages of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Raghunath Das Goswami was leading a life of a mendicant. Right? Although he came from such a well-to-do family, he was in Jagannath Puri, and somehow he felt that he should adopt a life of a renunciate. And the initial days he was in the Simadwar begging for a few alms. Not that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that you have to do this, but somehow, you know, he was inspired within himself. But then after some time he realized that what he was doing was not proper. You know, how could he be actually begging at the Simadwar? Because he was thinking in his mind that any person who was coming, you know, such a person would be giving me something. Oh, this person will give me something, that person will give me something. You know, and he was thinking in his mind that this is actually the mentality of a prostitute. So it is not appropriate for me to be doing this. So then he would go into the free food distribution center where he would be you know, getting whatever he required. And when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to know about this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased. He said, this is the right thing for a renunciate to do. And after a few days of doing that, he was feeling that, you know, even doing this is not appropriate because, you know, what am I doing? I'm just filling my belly. And then he would just take a few palmfuls of buttermilk every day. And then when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard this, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was even more pleased. And then when Raghunath Das Goswami actually went and started taking this rice that even the cows would not eat, which was thrown away by the shopkeepers, you know, after it became decomposed. And then he would go over there and take this, you know, pieces of rice and take it home and wash it. And then he would eat that. Then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu became actually even more pleased. So as a devotee takes to this process of Krishna consciousness and starts applying this process into his life, and he feels in his own heart this transformation, you know, that he is becoming more and more enlivened by the process. The spiritual master also reciprocates by, you know, facilitating him or expressing his pleasure that this person has taken to this path and he is becoming more and more renounced. And for all of us, finally, at the end of the day, you know, when we are going to be invalid, when our bodies are not going to be cooperating with us, at that time, what is it that we would be having? The association of devotees. Because those devotees are the ones who will actually come to us at the time when we need them the most. Because they are our ever well-wishers. Because their only goal is to somehow or the other ensure that we are remembering Krishna at the end of our lives. So this association of devotees has been made possible by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, by setting this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Anywhere and everywhere that we go in the world, we see how, you know, people are taking up to this process because they are realizing that this is the only solution. And it is not that people require a huge amount of convincing, because the whole material world is degenerating to such an extent today, you know, so fast, that just by hearing the philosophy, even a little bit, they are able to appreciate it. I remember recently we were with an old family friend whom we had known about 25, 30 years back, and we met them, you know, and they knew us before we had become devotees or before we came in connection with devotees. And somehow, you know, they were not able to relate to our new lifestyle. And I was just trying to understand from this couple, they had no children, what is it that they were, you know, and so the husband and wife both were employed. And so, since they were of the same age group, so natural question for me to ask was, how many children do you have? And then this lady, she said that we have got two babies. So I was just thinking in my mind that, you know, that they're already 51, 52 years old, and how could they be having babies, you know? So anyway, I asked, how old are they? So she said they are 1 year old. So I was even more bewildered. And then she could sense that, you know, we were not able to understand. So she said, they are actually puppies. So they had this 1 year old two puppies, you know, and the reason why, I mean, then she went to great details to explain to us, why is it that they had two puppies? The reason that they had two puppies was because the husband and wife both would go out to work, and this puppies needed company, you know. They also needed their own association. If the one puppy was left behind in the house, without the association of some other puppy, then you know that puppy would naturally become very, very agitated. So right from the beginning, they got these two puppies. And then every day in the morning, she was then, you know, she went into ecstasy as if, you know, she was explaining some very deep katha or something like that. And then she told us, you must come to our house and you must, you know, see our babies. And so we said, okay, we'll come to your house. And then we did go to our house. And actually, the moment we entered into the house, you know, these puppies, they became so agitated in a very loving way, because they could see that their master and mistress had come home. And, you know, they started scratching on the door and they were wanting to be released. And then, so this lady then took us on a tour of the house. And then these two puppies, you know, they were Pomeranian puppies. They had their own bedroom. And not just their own bedroom, they had their own bathroom. Right? And they had their own commode. And then she was telling us that this puppy is already toilet trained. So when they wanted to go to the toilet, they didn't need their master or their mistress. So whenever they wanted to go to the toilet, there was no door for that bathroom. So it would go inside and then they would use the commode exactly like how a human being uses the commode. And then there was a flush which was kept right at the bottom, and with a leg they would push the flush. And everything would go down the drain. And I was really surprised, because this Pomeranians, you know, their particular room was kept so neatly and nicely. It was not as if they were messy. And then she was telling us about their diet. So she was telling us that in the morning, my babies, they have 100 grams of dry fruits each. And then I was thinking to myself, now even we don't have 100 grams of dry fruits every day. Now this is real opulence. Right? And I was just thinking in my mind, what karma these puppies have had in their previous birth that they are having such, you know, this husband and wife, they are out slogging the whole day. And she was telling me that I hold a very high position in my company. She was some manager or something like that. And, you know, it's very intense. Her work schedule was very intense. But then these puppies, you know, they would have a nice breakfast, and then their lunch, their mistress would keep for them, and then they would have it at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, or maybe around that time. And then the evening, after she came home, she would cook a special dinner for them. Right? It would be invariably soup, or salads, or meat, or whatever. And you know, these puppies were actually looking so happy. And this mistress was also looking very happy. So I asked the mistress, you know, why is it that you never had any children? How come you landed up having these puppies? You know, it's been so many years since you have been married, but how is it that you never had children? And then she told us that these puppies are so loving. They're so caring. They're so affectionate. All that they give us is only love. And we know for sure that till the end of their lives, what they are going to give us is only love. But we can't be saying the same thing about children. We don't know what they will do to us, how they will behave when they become old. So we have opted for having these two puppies. And then after that, I started telling her something about the Bhagavad Gita I told her that, you know, your meditation on these puppies is so much. Do you realize that next life you could also become a puppy? So then that was something that, you know, really. So she wanted to hear more. And then I told her that you are giving so much of love to your puppies, but then what do you have as your diet? And then she said, I eat this, I eat fish, I eat meat. And so then I asked her, don't you see this connection? This same puppies to whom you are giving so much of love, I mean, they are also animals. And the meat that is there on your dining table, that is also coming from an animal. So don't you see the connection? And then it was for her a real eye-opener. I mean, this thing had never occurred to her. It was just that, you know, she had not even conceived that this could be a possibility, that there is a connection between a living animal whom she is loving and another animal that she is having on her dining table. And then she wanted to hear more. And then she wanted to hear more. So the point I'm making is that when we are going out to preach to people, you know, it is so easy, unless and until a person is a diehard atheist or an agnostic, people are actually receptive to this philosophy because they appreciate it. And then they're able to see the connection. Now, what we are talking is not just sentimentalism, but it is actually practical. So we have this responsibility. Somehow the other, yena kena prakarena, somehow the other, you just give Krishna to people and you will see how receptive they are to this path of Krishna consciousness. And most people, it is not that they don't want to be God conscious. And in fact, this couple, they go to the church every Sunday, very God fearing people. Right? But it is just that they never saw the connection between a living animal and a dead animal. Right? But when you explain to them about this philosophy, you know, they're able to appreciate it. So that's our responsibility for all of us who have got this great fortune. As Vrindavan Chandra Prabhu was explaining yesterday, that we are so fortunate to be connected to Srila Prabhupada's mission. And this is the only mission, he was emphasizing this particular point, that this is the only mission, that this is the only path which gives you an opportunity to go home back to Godhead in the same lifetime. And he had experience with so many others to whom he had been connected, and they were explaining to him that it would take you millions of lifetimes to go home back to Godhead. Right? And irrespective of anything else, at the end of the day, that is what we need to aspire for. And the purport of the fifth canto, fifth chapter, on this particular verse, Nayam Deho Deha Bhajamna Loke, Srila Prabhupada says that is the goal for all of us, to go home back to Godhead. Right? We should not forget that. Under no circumstance should we ever have that. It should always be there, that this is the goal for us, to go home back to Godhead. It's 9:15 now, so a couple of minutes. So if you have any questions, we can take it up. Or Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.